listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, guys. I hope you had a great weekend, starting of the week with, they say, Hump Wednesday, but I say Hump Monday. Everybody's getting back into motion. Some restrictions have been lifted and, you know, people are out and about, masks are off. But remember, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands, because that's very important to staying safe out here today. And also take your vitamin C. Plays a major part in your immune system as well. Today, guys, we have a very interesting show today. We have someone coming on at 6:30. Something that has taken place this weekend in Philadelphia. And I am going to say that I was their lifeline. I felt like I was in the middle of a movie trying to negotiate with someone being held hostage. That's what it kind of felt like. You know, I get a phone call at 11 o'clock at night and then boom, you know, this like railroads you, you know, I'm trying to get my composure and wake up in the midst of things. But we're going to get back to that in just a second. I need to update you on some things. And that is the King Hill case, the missing two-year-old from Philadelphia, who is now three, soon to be four. July 29th, he has a birthday coming up. So I want to give you a little update on Tiana Parks. Well, from what the record says, because I don't want to do hearsay, it looks like someone is paying attention and she will be getting further investigation into her side of the story of actually dropping King Hill off. I know we talked about the last name being an issue, and possibly because the father was never around during this time, the biological father. The babysitter father was around, which is, you know, the fake stepdad. That's what they called him. So at some point, hopefully this story will have a great ending, and not an ending that, you know, we all believe could be true or could not be true, because this young lady still has to stand trial. But something very interesting came across my desk. And the question beside, you know, this piece of paper, it was written on a piece of paper, and someone left it on my desk and they gave me a name and they said, question mark, question mark, question mark. And it's attached to a phone number, question mark, question mark, question mark. And the name is Eric Caraballo. Caraballo. I hope I'm saying it right. We know he's Hispanic, not Italian. So I don't want to say Caraballo. It's Caraballo. So a lot of question marks in regards to this name, with him potentially being the biological father and having an address in Indiana with a Puerto Rico cell phone number. So I received a lot of question marks in regards to that. Now, you know, this happens all the time, and this may not be the case. Let me say that. This may or may not be the case in this particular King Hill situation. It may be the dad, who is estranged, could have been incarcerated and said, okay, I'm out now. I'm going to get my kid and I'm going to kidnap him. Let's just say that for thoughts in our minds. So with all these question marks, it makes me kind of wonder, you know, because there are some absent dads out there today. And there are some dads that are not absent that are there 110% for their kid. But it appears to be, with all these question marks and questions of this phone number of Mr. Caraballo Sr. And by the way, there was more question marks because another little note had that Eric Caballo, I think he is, because there's a senior Caraballo, then there's a Eric Caballo Jr., Then there's an Eric Caballo the third. So the third would be the possible biological father. Now, Eric Caraballo Jr. would be Eric Caraballo the third's father. And Eric Caraballo Sr. is a little confusing, would be the grandfather. So it was just a little puzzling because a phone call was made to him to just have a brief conversation. And he started speaking English, and all of a sudden he says, you know, in Spanish, that he does not speak any English. So I am of Latino descent, so I start speaking to him in Spanish, and he says he does not speak English, and I'm speaking to him in Spanish. Long story short, it was just a little weird about that phone call because I'm just trying to piece it together. And I get it. Sometimes people, you know, don't change their phone numbers over. You know, he's in Puerto Rico. He's traveling. But you're in Indianapolis and you still have this phone number years later. Kind of weird. But it's to be, you know, question mark. And we're going to put that into that box. So there is a biological dad out there, and hopefully we can get some, you know, leverage as to if the biological father is involved in this disappearance, or did he in fact do something to this missing baby? And did Tiana Parks in fact drop the baby off to the biological father thinking that she did the right thing? Which is, you know, a babysitter. He's a dad. He's like, I want my kid. This young lady, Parks, says, I talked with the mom. She said it was okay. And there the baby went and ran off. So there are some things that has to be looked into in regards to the disappearance and what could have happened to this missing baby, especially with nobody, weapon charge. Well, let me say this, instrument used has been withdrawn as per the record from the lower court. So it's a little confusing, this whole story. So, you know, we're just trying to piece it together and see how it all makes sense, because there is someone. And we're going to say that someone is Ms. Parks. Her life is on the line, you know. And thank you to the 800,000 listeners that's on this call today for supporting this LA Talk Radio and chiming in and seeing how we all can put the pieces of the puzzle together. So, you know, the discrepancy with the last name was another red flag. And hopefully that wasn't the ultimate escape route. Because like I said, if you're looking for Jones and it's Matthews, who should you really be looking for? So it's a lot of things to keep in mind. And, you know, nobody, but then a funeral was, you know, in preparation, which any mother, family member will prepare, because if this is what you're being told and you are in agreement with that, then you are taking matters into the right step of closure for yourself. And really there is no closure until something or somebody comes forward. But if the dad in fact does have this kid, and we're not giving up on all ends, and I'm glad that Mrs. Parks' attorney is taking a second look in this case and doing some more due diligence. I wouldn't even say investigative work. I'm going to say due diligence, because that is what's needed right now. Due diligence. There's a lot of hangers, you know, hangers. Hangers can untwirl if you bend them the right way. So I'm not sure if this family, if they are in fact involved, if this family would know the trouble that they're in if this kid was ever found in their possession. You know, their whole lives would be twisted and turned, down to the grandmother who had a social presence on social media, which I found very weird with them, you know, such in a hurry to move out of the state of New Jersey to disappear. She basically vanished on social media. So that was kind of weird to me as well, you know. So it's all kind of weird. It's a lot of ties within that is still being withheld, you know, secrets. So at the end of the day, the ultimate goal is to bring this kid back and hopefully get closure, not only for the family, but for everyone out there who has taken out the time out of their busy schedules to go on the hunt for this kid. Not even look for him. They went on the hunt. They went on the rant. They stopped. They listened. They got the call. The kid was missing. It could have been you, a stranger, listening in on this call today. Oh my God, a two-year-old is missing. You know, what do? You stop. You start making phone calls. You start sharing it via social media. You start texting it out to friends. You find out when a search party is going to take place, and you go out in the woods looking for this body that they believe has been disposed of. So there's been a lot of people that have helped out in this case. Moving on to Tiana Parks, the attorney she has is, my thoughts of him is he's very sharp. He's like a number two pencil. And if there's anybody that can get to the facts of what really happened to this child, he will get to the bottom of it, along with bits and pieces from others, you know, as they move forward with the due diligence period. As I think it was not properly investigated, because during the first press release, it was, as per the detective stated, somebody's not telling us the truth here. So the law enforcement had an idea that somebody was not being honest. So, you know, I'm quite sure that sits in the back of their mind. And if we're looking at this from a positive side of the fence, if this baby is still alive, then it will be mud on somebody's face, because then they will be saying, this young lady was telling us the truth. She dropped this kid off. If, in fact, this is the case, she dropped this kid off. Had she been in touch with the mother prior? According to her, she has. You know, you can only base it off of her statements. They're not mine. They're hers. So there's a lot of missing pieces to the puzzle with that case. But I'm glad that they have dropped the trial temporarily, and they have given this more thought of what could have truly happened and reenacted her footsteps of when and who, all the key players, is eventually going to come out. It's going to be mud in somebody's face. So we're going to keep our eyes and ears open, but I just wanted to give you the update on that as well. And my run-in with the Caraballos, who, you know, don't speak any English. So that is yet to be found out. If they need translation, that might be, you know, I thought I did pretty good, being as though I'm not fluent as I should be, but I believe I did pretty well in saying who I am, and I wanted to talk with him in regards to this matter and in regards to his son, you know, his son and his grandson. So that was quite an interesting phone call. Next time it'll be recorded. That way you guys can hear it too. See if anybody can pick up the voice. But moving forward, we talked last week to a gentleman that has had trauma in his family, which we're going to be looking into that for him. And hopefully he can get some type of closure. It's a lot of things that go on in Florida, by the way, folks. I don't know if you know, the Trayvon Martin situation, but there's a lot of side things that go on, like judges' sons and friends of the judge. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, you know, favoritism, And I'm not just going to say in Florida, because it's favoritism everywhere, you know? So it's more of who you know and not what you know. It's not even what you do anymore. It's how you do it type of thing. So you'll find that you'll have all different types of run-ins. You know, George Floyd situation, had the young lady never had it videotaped, you know, that would have been open, closed case. You know, we don't know what happened. He was on drugs. He choked on his own saliva. He's dead. Okay, case closed. And we talked about that. You know, people don't realize that when the case is closed, everybody else gets to move on with their life and the family members are left behind struggling. You know, and I say to myself sometimes, because I look at what's going on in Philadelphia and New Jersey, New York, Florida, you know, it makes me kind of take a look at things a little bit differently on favoritism and how things play out. There was some individual, we're going to call this person, matter of fact, I'm going to say, because I'm a mother, so to me, he's a boy. He's a very little boy. He's of legal age, but let's just call him Man Boy. So he's Man Boy. So Man Boy posts up threats on social media in regards to having my head cut off and posting illegal weapons that, come to find out, he's not even supposed to have in his possession because he's currently out on bail. And that was brought to my attention by other law enforcement, that this Man Boy is out on bail for similar charges, and Man Boy is not supposed to have any illegal weapons or posing any threats to anyone. So unfortunately for Man Boy, I had to call in some people that I know. We talk about that favoritism and favorites and who you know. In regards to posting, he wanted my head as a trophy. And that was brought to my attention by law enforcement. Okay. Significant evidence against Man Boy for, you know, posing threats on social media. You know, this is recent, by the way, with the rappers. They're on social media. They're posting guns. People don't know that, and I'm going to say people, as well as Man Boy, because just the posting a threat to myself, which he doesn't know who I am. He knows of me, but he doesn't know me. So that is a federal crime. So if Man Boy is actually listening, I hope that he can get himself together mentally and get the proper help, because people, mental illness today is very, very real. It's very, very real, you know, and people take that part for granted that, you know, this person is just being dumb. He's just being young. No, it's called mental illness. And I will say this. Some people do not need to reproduce, because that mental illness follows down the line, the DNA trace of mental illness. There are things that needs to chime in on with mental illness and the proper funding and get these people the proper help, you know, because either they're going to get killed by someone or they're going to kill themselves by indulging in criminal acts, or they're going to find themselves in a very bad situation. And just to give you a little backstory about me and my career of the line of work that I do, I have been into many prisons. Okay. I've spoken to many inmates and I have told them, this arena that you're in, and I feel bad for them because I'm a mother. I feel bad for them, because you're sitting here, you're getting yourself into trouble, all for what? As a matter of fact, I had to go visit an inmate that woke up and didn't realize that he was high on pills and laced marijuana and didn't realize that he murdered someone. So this is a real catastrophe. And his defense was, I suffer from mental illness as a child. So taking these illegal narcotics, indulging, is killing the brain cells. And there's no one that is reaching out to the youth to help them with this illness that they have. You know, mental illness is real. You know, when you want to, and this is only from stories that I read via the news and some cases that I have been on myself. When you harm your own child and you suffer from mental illness, you do not ever need to see that child as being a parent again. That, and like I said before, for the ones that were following my show before, it's like putting a rape victim with the rapist. How dare you, Mr. Government? How dare you corrupt system? How dare you? You know, it's really, really, really sad that it has come down to that. And then you have people that will represent that system because guess what? It's a salary for them. You know, the system that takes the kid out of the home through these different agencies and puts them with other people and they forget about them. They basically, they do their homework in the beginning and they basically forget about them. They'll do the visit to make sure that they're okay because they have to write up, you know, notes for the month. But in all actuality, they're not helping the situation any because they have their own issues. They have mental issues as well that they're coping with. And that's all within that big brown box of social services, we shall call them. They're social and they're supposed to issue you services, allegedly. We'll say that. But they're all in cahoots together, folks. So if you're thinking, you know, I'm having a hard time, I'm going to let my kid go in this system, you better think again because you may never see your child again. Your child may end up dead on the streets like the Elisiana Carter case that didn't get properly investigated. And, you know, you got a grown man that has not been charged with basically, I won't even say it's rape. It's sodomy for a 32-year-old man to be sleeping with a 12-year-old little girl, you know? So these are the people that actually had her in custody, the social services help. So I'm not here to bash them because I have friends that do work for this system and they are good. They help families. They want to reunite them, not separate them. You know, the ones that are separators are still trying to keep a paycheck because they work for the third party, you know, the Catholic system, Catholic communities, Catholic charities. I believe it's that agency that funds that third party agency that is supposed to do their job. But some people, according to things that I've read in the news, of how certain individuals handle certain cases that work for that social service system, they have mental illness as well. So it's kind of hard saying that your kid would be in good hands with a governmental agency such as social services. And not all of them are bad. Some of them are good people. The decent ones are good, you know. I've seen some things with these people that are just, they should have been arrested themselves. Because if you leave a child behind and you forget about that child, and then you come and you remove the child, especially in the Carter case, you remove that child and you fail to go back and do your job, you're just as guilty as the parent if something happens to that kid. You should be jailed as well. And, you know, in some countries, if these social services fail the people, they stone them from what I've read. So it can get nasty in other countries, which is very brutal. It's harsh punishment because they trust you with their child. In many third world countries, they don't have a social services, You know, that's why they always have the infomercials about, you know, a dollar a day feeds a kid, one bag of rice, you know. And actually, in my country, this is factual. You know, you send a bag of rice, you can feed maybe 30 people in the village, you know. So it's different out there for different cultures and how they live and, you know, having social services. America have, you know, they have it good here. You know, the foster parent will get a stipend, so they're getting paid. Then you have, you know, the other agencies of the parenting educational skills that you have to take in order to get your kid back. This is another dollar sign for the system. It's called, you're a part of the budget. You're a part of the fiscal year. That's what it's actually called. So people who don't look into the fiscal year budget of what they're allocating for babysitters for your children, you need to really look that up, because that's public information. So it's nothing that I have to guesstimate. Like $4 billion. $4 billion went to Catholic community charities, you know, that fund that third party agency, you know, the paper pushers. Yeah, they fund that third party agency with all this money for the system to be running in the way that it's running. It's absolutely nuts. So that's something to take a look at, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. That's what I'm going to call you guys, as well as myself, because we all pay taxes. Well, I'm not going to say we all, because, you know, we got the other ones that we take care of as well, which is okay, because everyone needs a little help here and there. So that's fine. I hear that there's some people out there with other podcasts that like my show. Thank you for chiming in as well and being updated, because I will keep you updated every step of the way. I'm just waiting for the press release to release that last name. And hopefully we can get it out to Puerto Rico, because that is a part of America. So we'll get it out to Puerto Rico and all the other places where we may think this dad may be hibernating and living a good life. So we'll put that out there. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Now, I'm going to jump back into my initial statement of a phone call that I received from a friend that lives in Philadelphia that said to me about 11:30 at night, I couldn't think of anyone else to call, so I called you. And I'm saying, what's going on? And in the background, I hear noise, like scrambling and people running and people screaming and yelling and a whole bunch of commotion that sounded like somebody was firing shots, and I heard glass breaking. It was very crazy Saturday when I received that phone call. And I had to pause for a moment. I had to really say, what is going on? And my first response was, did you dial 911? Because you're in Philadelphia, I'm in New Jersey. It will take me hours to get to you, because I live on the other side. So there's no way possible that I could get to you to help you. Mind you, it's a whole house full of people and kids. But I have a caller calling in, because I wanted to talk to you about dialing 911. And this is very, very serious, because I have friends, and I'm going to tell you about that, that work for that 911 dispatch, not in Philadelphia, but in other states. And I've been on the phone with a 911 dispatch, because she's my friend, with her caller that called in about, you know, guns and someone was threatening them. And basically she says, okay, I'll send the car. The car never got sent. So, and I'm not in favoritism of those people. I don't care if it is a friend that does stuff like that, because someone's life is on the line, and that's your job to fill in the blanks, Mr. or Mrs. 911. That's what I will call you today. So that is your position. That is your job. That's what you took an oath to do, to help the public. So I have, her name is Shay. Shay is going to come on the line in just a second here. And she's going to detail out not so much about what initiated, but more so about that 911 call. And, you know, it gave me chill bumps to even talk about it, because when I hung up with my friend, I called my friend's number back, and Shay answers the phone, and she's whispering. And I'm saying to myself, what is going on, and why am I having a hard time hearing you? She was hiding in the basement because she didn't want anyone to hear her. You got people trying to break the door down. You got people shooting in the door. You got them shooting through the window. You have babies running around. Very, very scary phone call for me, and having to stay on that line and give her guidance, you know, as to what should she do, stay low, because if there's windows in the basement, but unfortunately sometimes there's windows that you cannot get out of that's in the basement. So that was very, very, very horrible to me in how the 911 dispatch in Philadelphia handled this particular incident, with someone saying, you know, they're shooting, we need a police officer, we need someone. So I think the best advice I can give anybody, they say, if it's an emergency, you know, dial 911 or hide or move to an area that's safe. But what if you're in a situation where your back is against the wall and you have no way out, and these people are coming through your door? And this is not unheard of in Philadelphia. People actually will come in your home while you're there. So, you know, this was a little spooky to me, especially you're calling me, well, my friend is calling me at 11:30 at night, you know, to say they don't know anybody else to call because they've been dialing 911 for 30 minutes. You know, so that was kind of scary to me to be on that phone call. And, you know, thank goodness there was no one harmed during that event. And you have babies that were basically taken out of their sleep to prevent them from getting hurt. So, you know, Shay, if you're listening, you can call in now, but I'll still keep giving our listeners the update on this particular case. You have bullies, you have illegal weapons, you have people that are trying to get in your home while you're there. You have people in your home that are just visiting, and they are saying, what is going on here? You know, why is it that I'm dialing 911 and no one is sending a police car? So finally, I find out the district, and I call the district, and I give them my credentials, and I explain to them that I am here in New Jersey and there is no way possible I could get to my friend who is in harm's way. I need someone to send a car. Had I never made that phone call, they would have probably waited another 20 to 30 minutes to get someone on the phone. Okay, Shay's on. So let's talk to Shay. Hey, Shay, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you today, dear?
I'm well. Thank you.
We're going to talk about that phone call that I got. I'm not going to mention any names of, you know, my friend, because there's an ongoing investigation right now. And you were privy to be at the home during this horrible incident that took place Saturday night at about 11:30 p.m. So I was just telling the callers that when my friend called me, and I actually dropped her call, and I called back and I got you instead.
Yeah.
And do you remember I asked you how many times did you call 911?
Wow. It was about maybe about five to six times back to back. So I know sometimes that, you know, phone connections, they, you know, something happened with those networks and things like that. But I call on my phone personally about five or six times and just kept ringing and ringing and ringing and never, like, no one ever picking up. So in that kind of a situation, you know, you kind of panic because you expect for 911 to pick up at some point, even if the line is busy, or you may have, I understand that you may have more than one person, or that, you know, it's a lot of dispatches and may call through at the same time. But when I called, my call kept failing at that point. So, I never got a chance to speak to anybody.
And there were also other people in the home dialing 911. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Everybody had a cell phone at that time. And we all tried to dial 911 because, you know, like I said, we were all in fear and we needed to call the law, and that was important. So we expected someone to pick up. I never underestimated that they would not answer. I always thought that 911 would answer, but in spite of the emergency like that, when situations happen like that, you don't think that 911 wouldn't pick up. So because I didn't get through the first two or three times, it didn't bother me some. I just decided to keep calling. That was my only admission, just to keep calling until I finally got someone.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to backtrack with you a little bit. We're not going to mention any names because the case is under investigation, because it was Saturday that this took place. But I wanted to ask you this. What was going through your mind when you heard the bullets breaking the windows, going through the doors? Like, what was going on in your mind?
Oh, my God. I'm in nursing school, so I never expected anything of like that to happen. To me, it kind of seemed like it was a movie. Like, it didn't even seem real. I mean, these were family members and friends that we know. And for this to take place, you know, you panic. You don't know what to do. You don't know who to call. And you just felt really scared and unsafe. Like, I didn't. At that point, who do you call or what do you do? You know, you can't just crawl underneath a bed or anything like that. You know what I mean?
So you're actually now in the basement. Like, you're in the basement. When I call back, you were whispering, and I was wondering why you're whispering, and you're saying you didn't want them to hear you because you were thinking at that point that these people are going to kill me.
Yes. I was in fear for my life. I was in fear because everybody else's life that was around me. Like I said, when I spoke to you, I didn't even exactly know who I was speaking to. Like, again, I was just trying to reach out to all my whole mindset was just to get help, call for help. Anybody can connect me through. Anybody can call. Anybody that gets through. Call help. Help is needed. We need help now. In the basement, it was dark. You know, you kind of couldn't go. You couldn't go left or right, so you had to be at a standstill. And it was like a barricade. Like, I had to barricade myself and still try to find, you know, phones to, even if I had to call from a different phone, to try to get the help that I needed. Because, you know, my phone wasn't working and nobody else's phone wasn't getting through. So, you know, I was at a standstill.
Well, you know, and I was thinking about when I asked you a few questions and I said, let me call the direct number that I have for you know, the district that you were in. We're going to leave that part out. But I put you on three-way, and I let this detective hear your cry and your cry for help and how afraid you were. And I'm afraid if I never stayed on that phone with you, I'm not sure of the outcome, because they would have never came if I never made that call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I thank God that I was able to talk to somebody. Like, again, at the time, I didn't even know who I was talking to. But the fact that I was talking to somebody, I just needed to reach out. Again, like I said, a lot of things was racing through my mind. You know, do I call my family? Do I call my daughter? What do I do at this particular time where you don't have much leeway to go forward or backward at this time, because I had to stay barricaded in the basement steps, like in the steps, and barricade myself because that was the only option. Again, like I said, it was really terrifying. Something I'd never ever experienced in my entire life. I would have never thought that 911 would have never picked up. And I just thought that in my mind, because everybody had cell phones, everybody had network towers that were working at the properly, we thought that, you know, we were going to get right through, and somebody was going to call for help, and we were going to be rescued at that point.
And what about the kids that were in the home? Like, how did you guys protect them?
So the kids were definitely a priority. The women and children, the older women and children, were definitely a priority. At that time, we didn't really expect any of this to happen. It really kind of caught everybody off guard. So the women and children, once that happened, we kind of told, somebody had made a split decision to say, okay, all women and children, everybody, beside that, everybody had to get on the floor and get down. Or somebody made a conscious decision and said, all women and children out the back, on the kitchen floor, out the back door. They were laying on the kitchen floor. And then once still shots were still being fired, we had to get everyone down the stairs, out the back door properly. That was the first priority, because you had mothers and, you know, aunts and things like that. So that was the first priority, to get these minors out the house safely, and then to deal with the problem afterwards, because you couldn't walk. It was dark. Like I said, it was very, 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 very terrifying.
And I could, you know, with your family members in place, and not to disclose it on the air, but you knowing the agency that I work for, do you feel as though I assisted in saving lives that night?
Oh my God, yes. Because had I not talked to you, and when we spoke on the phone, you kept saying, like, who is this? Who is this? Tell me, calm down, calm down. Let me know, what are you doing? Where are you exactly? And I'm like, listen, I was so distraught that night that I think I even used profanity. I was even cussing, because I wanted somebody to actually know where I was and know what was happening at that very moment. So the fact that I actually talked to you, kind of like, in all reality, it kind of saved everybody's life, because we're calling five and six times back to back, constant, 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 and no one's picking up. You was the only savior at that point. And I didn't even know, like I said, I had no idea on what was happening, but the fact that I was talking to you, and I explained to you what was going on, just to please hurry, please hurry, please hurry. We are in the dark and we have nowhere else to go.
Well, Shay, I'm glad that I could step in and step up and help out, because, you know, the crime that's going on right now in Philadelphia, everything is getting overlooked. And, you know, I do understand they can't be everywhere, but for something like that, the 911 operator should have picked up in a timely manner to keep you guys on the phone you know, to calm you down and get specific details of the actual perpetrators, which we'll be back on the show again to discuss that topic once this case is somewhat to the middle in court. But Shay, I'd like to say thank you for calling in today. And we'd like to have you back on the show.
Okay, thank you very much. You have a great day.
Okay, you too, Shay. Thank you. Okay, so there you have it. You know, you didn't hear it from me. You heard it from the horse's mouth. And I feel good actually knowing that I can help someone. And eventually my friend will come on. She's still a little disturbed about the things that had taken place that night, but she wants to come on the show and discuss the backstory, because there's a backstory to every story going forward. And she wants to talk about, you know, how she couldn't think of, you know, 911 is always your first choice. Remember that. But she couldn't think of anybody else to call to say, I need help. And she said, I thought of you. You're the person that came in my mind. She didn't think about her mom. She didn't think about, you know, any friend. She thought about me because of my line of work. And she figured I could be the one to help her. And which I'm glad I did, because these people were like in the wild, wild west. And you got babies crawling. You got people hiding under the stairs. It's a very tight basement. If, you know, the initial plan, the initial escape plan was to get everybody out through the back door, because the gunshots initially started on the front of the home. And that didn't work out, because before they knew it, it was perpetrators at the back of the door shooting. So you got people shooting at the front door and people shooting at the back door. And let me tell you, this is not a case where there's drugs or money in the house and they know and they're trying to break in. This is an actual case of disgruntledness. And we'll get back to this case, and people will be on the air and they're going to share, you know, what this minute argument was over that led to, could have been deadly violence of a lot of people getting murdered, slaughtered in this home. When there was no front door, no back door, you're in a basement, there's no other way out, your back is against the wall. What do you do at that point? Besides cringe and pray and hope that through the darkness, they can't find you and they can't see you. So they, you know, usually these people, they don't want any witnesses. You know, they call up one friend, calls another friend. Okay, this friend has some guns. Okay, we're going to be in the wild, wild west. You know, we're going to George Washington's block. We're going to shoot it up, so to say. But, you know, at the end of the day, and I only use that because I was watching a movie about George Washington and horses, and, you know, Idris Elba was in it. So that's why I use that. And it was in Philadelphia. So, you know, this is really deep, and we're going to get down to the bottom of this minute argument that led to maybe, now we're talking about 10 to 12 people in the house, including children that could have been murdered, you know, innocent people. And like Shay said, she's in nursing school. Never did she expect to go visit a family member. And now you're thinking, you know, I'm at a family member's house. What could happen to me at my family member's house? I'm safe. I'm inside. I'm not on the corner. I'm literally sitting down in my family member's living room. And then gunshots are flying everywhere. You can't imagine what was running through this young lady's mind and everybody else in the house. You know, I always say, you know, if you have a situation that you can handle prior to violence, try to handle it that way. Because at the end of the day, it's a lot of people dying for just no reason. Because people are, one, mentally ill. Two, they're just disgruntled. Three, they have a strange history of jealousy for the other party. So this goes very deep within various communities out here today. But next week, we will touch topics on this story. I will follow up with you on the Carabello, who speaks no English. He took two pills. He don't know nothing. I'll follow up with you on that. And thanks for joining in. Have a great night. Bye now.
You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk. Talk Radio.